Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, YouTube as well. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and Nicole really wanted to do a show about magic. And that's everybody's favorite horror writer right there, Nicole Six. How are you, Nicole?
Good afternoon. It's good to see everybody. I'm glad you can make it, Mark.
This was your special request. I've never had you say, oh, you know what? I've got a show I really want to do.
Well, this person who may or may not be watching this messaged me that they were like a member of the Masons. They wanted to discuss all this esoteric things with me. And it got me thinking, I know some people that are really interesting that I would like to see discussing magic. So.
Mm-hmm. And they're not on the show.
Well, I don't really know that person, but I know these two people.
No, we both know these two people. One of them has been on the show before. And, if it's up to me, she could be on the show every week. We can kick you out and have her be the co-host, or actually whatever. Be her co-host. But I think if she had her druthers, I'd be kicked out and it'd be the two of you. But she's wonderful. You've seen her all over the place. She does tea readings. She does smoke readings. She was on our show. She gave me a tea reading, which may or may not have come true. So far, it's inconclusive. But and then she was on with Santa Claus, and she's everybody's favorite tassiographer, Brissa Miller.
Thank you so much for having me back, Nicole, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm so excited to be part of this exclusive group with Sal.
Yeah, and I got my teacup. I got my green tea. I was thinking last time I saw Sal, I figured it out today. It was 4 years ago. And because I went to his store to get some sage when I moved into this apartment.
Oh, and wow.
Apparently, it's done me wonders because I'm still in the apartment. I can still pay the rent, which in LA is no mean feat. And I've lost a lot of weight. I've got a new job. I've been in a bunch of movies. The podcast is going great. I credit it all to the stage I bought at the Crooked Path. And this guy, and it's funny because I saw you, and the last time I saw you, it was like, I haven't seen you in like 5 years. So I think every 4 or 5 years we get together, and it's good to see you. It's Sal Santoro, the owner of the Crooked Path.
Nice to see you guys. Thank you guys for having me on. And this is kind of cool. I've heard that this was going on with you guys, and I've never got to, come in yet. So this will be a great first show for this. And
last time I saw you, we were talking about this. Like, oh, you should come on the show. And then you were doing your own live stream with Renee, who worked there. And then, so now we're here. So there was a global pandemic in there and all of that. But I will keep energy up because I'll be drinking Ray's energy drink. This is our sponsor. The best energy drink in the world. I'm drinking this with green tea and it works as well. And if you doubt that this works as an energy drink, listen to our show last week when everybody was drinking raised energy drink and there was like a mile a minute and we couldn't stop talking until like an hour after the show. Am I right, Nicole?
Oh yeah, it was quite a good time.
And the best part about raising an energy drink, zero carbs, zero calories, zero crash. And Rissa, it is vegan. And go into the podcast description, get 15% off Ray's energy drinks. So, Nicole?
Yes.
It's all yours. What
first question I will ask is to both of you. We can start with Sal and then go to Rissa, because I'm looking at Sal's face right now. So, what was it that first attracted you to magic? How did magic find you?
When people ask that question, I try to be as honest and forthright as I can. I am a witch to the bone. And when I say that, I wanted to learn a way to work things to my will, no matter what, I wanted to bend things to my outcome, how I wanted them to be early on in my life. I believed in not having anything between me and my will except for what it takes to get there. And magic and witchcraft was the way that I found myself doing it. And I started in literally 1981. In 81, I was, 17 years old, depending on the month. And I just found my way into witchcraft back east.
It was so long ago you learned from Merlin.
Yeah, almost. I mean, I learned, my first book was from Paul Hewson. It was a master in witchcraft. And that was my first experience with it. Now you gotta remember, at that point, things weren't as prevalent as they are now. You couldn't go to the Crooked Path in New Hampshire in the early 80s and the 70s, right? So you had to, you know, just dig. And that was the first book I found. And then from there, I found 777 by Aleister Crowley. And those were my get up and go points there. But that's why I got into it. I didn't get into it for spirituality. I didn't get into it for any other reason other than bending things to my will. And I believe that, you know, I have my own versions of what things mean. You know, I think everybody does. And I don't believe that people should push on each other about what is right, what is wrong. I mean, we're all adults. We all make decisions and, you know, sometimes consequences for decisions we make. But I you know, for me, witchcraft is the science of causing change with will by utilizing the elements and the planets. And that's where it started for me.
That's what it is to me as well. It's about energy management, using the cosmos is how I look at it.
Yeah.
Everything I do is about, I know it's about will, but I also, for me, I like to attract opportunities. So I like to set things up to be the best that they could possibly be for me going forward.
I agree. Yeah, and that's how I see it. It wasn't always my spirituality. I mean, I started doing this at that point, and I moved through. By the time I moved to Los Angeles, it was 1988. I was baptized in a Wiccan coven in 89. And then I left about a year and a half later, went to another group, did the same thing. Then from there, I moved on to the Golden Dawn first time. And I was with them for a couple of years. So I moved through systems and I just got great opportunity to work with great mentors and teachers. And I had the opportunity to work with for George Derby, who was the original owner for Eye of the Cat. Not Eye of the Cat, Panpipes. Judith DeFranco's Eye of the Cat, which was my baptismal form. But George taught me a lot. And I was there in the mid-90s. And then from there, I moved on to Raven's Flight, which was and Griffin, who now owns the Green Man. And so I did my time with them as well. But during that area, you know, I saw different systems. I got to meet Anton LaVey before he died. Studied some of the satanic philosophy as far as Church of Satan went. I have a little bit of a background in working with the Loa and the gods of Haiti. And just kept moving around, but I never worked in it to be for spirituality. You know, I was kind of almost agnostic. And it went that way, you know, right up through my adult life, up into the 2000s. And when I met my wife, her family was from the island of Crete in Greece. And that's when it happened. And I went there. And I always tell people that I went there, had an experience, came home, and it was like I got donkey punched by Hecate. And she gave me very specific instructions, and I was to follow them to the letter. And what the first one was to open a store. The second was to build her a place of worship and to teach classes in witchcraft and incorporate her into my life. And now I'm a zealot. I am 100% Hecatean, and my life has just gotten better and better because of it.
So the secret to any marriage is donkey punching, basically, is what you're saying.
Well, from a god.
Now, Risa, the first witchy book I kind of looked into was Teen Witch. I think that's common. But how did you, because I'm the only non-witch here, how did you get into witchcraft?
I was probably born into it, really. And where Sal's tradition involves more high magic, I would say I came more from a folk tradition. The kind that's just handed down between families and small communities and recorded in handwritten books. that's sort of my background. And for me, I didn't think it was strange until I was told not to talk to friends about it. And I was also, I didn't look for spirituality. It kind of found me in actual spirits. And I was one of the little girls who could see ghosts, who could interact with things that weren't there or that other people couldn't see. And part of what led me into the practice of magic was trying to understand and control that, was trying to understand boundaries, was trying to understand how to manage that kind of ability. It's not always a gift, sometimes a gift, sometimes not. But I think that it wasn't so much that I went seeking as it just was always there. It was always part of me. It was part of my family. It was part of the culture I grew up understanding. And I'm trying to remember the first witchy books that I read. I read so much as a little girl, and I don't remember. I do remember when I first saw 777. It's when I was a freshman in high school is when I read that book. It wasn't a formative book for me, though. I was much more interested in plants and talking to spirits and managing that kind of craft, which, again, is more folk magic and less high magic. So that's, an opposite perspective.
Well, it's opposite coast. I mean, you're in rural Maryland. You're foraging, as I've I've caught up with your foraging videos. Panpipes was the big store in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. The owner of Panpipes, your mentor, actually was a consultant on the craft. And then Farissa Balk became, I guess, a co-owner.
She was my boss for a while.
Mm-hmm. How was that?
You never saw her. I mean, she came in, she came out. And ironically, years later, she ended up becoming a girlfriend of one of my dear friends who passed away in 2016, much later than their relationship. So we were in each other's lives a lot, you know, on and off through 20 years. I always knew her, but it was never super tight. But George was like my father in a lot of ways. And he was a crotchety bastard, you know. And before I had George in my life, I had Judith Dufresne, who was the person that built Eye of the Cat in Long Beach. And the thing about both of them is they're from Nolens. That was their home base, both of them. And so I was raised by these crotchety two older people that both separately kicked my ass for years, you know, and that was just part of it. It was part of my knowledge base and learning. I definitely understand high magic and ceremonial magic. I think it's a beautiful art form in a macrocosmic perspective. But I definitely see myself more as a witch, specifically. That term, is non-binary. It doesn't support gender. I don't see it as that at all. I just see it as a person that works the will. And I use herbology and planetary magic every day, because when you trace back the lineage of planetary structure and Ptolemaic scale, you realize that the seven planets are why we have the names of the days of the week. And every one of those planets correlates to specific herbs with specific reason. And so does the color perspective. Now, the color perspective of the planets literally came from Kabbalah, which is kind of strange because they're seven of the 10 Sephiroth on the Tree of Life. So there is different smatterings of both worlds in there, but color magic wasn't always a big part of it, I don't think, at that time, because a lot of people tell me, oh, I'm doing old spells that are ancient and I need these candles. And I'm like, why do you need these candles if it's this antiquated type of work? And they would tell me, and I'm like, well, wax wasn't colored until 1901. It was all neutral. And it was made of earthen color, whatever that the tallow created by the person, that's the color it came out to be. But this is also where we get stones from. When you start working, why are stones so precious to us? Well, that's because a lot of the more opaque or clear stones that come from the ground, like your corundums, basically your rubies and your emeralds and sapphires, they throw color because they would put them into braziers that would hold the flame, and then they could project the color of choice that would be the energy of that planet.
You guys understand exactly what you're saying. I have no idea. You guys work with stones. I know Rissa talks about stones on her videos. I know Nicole has talked about stones. I said translate from witch to non-witch. I'm a non-witch, so I don't know.
Okay,
I was like, what?
Okay. He's talking about the fact that if it was older magic, you didn't need to use the colors because before then they didn't have the colors anyway. But different colors manifest in different ways and everything works together. That's where I'm going to take this transition to. How has manifestation been made possible in your life? And what are the things you used when you manifest? I'll let Rissa take it first.
So I think one of the most important lessons for me in manifesting has been learning what I actually really want. Learning to ask for what I actually really want. And so many times when people come to me and have these kinds of questions, they think they know what they want is, I want a new job. But what they really want is financial freedom to do what they want. And they aren't actually saying what they want. They aren't articulating it correctly. Because another job could tie them down even more, could take up more of their time. It's not actually what they mean to say. So I think one of the most important manifestation tools is correct intention and actually knowing what you really want. And there are lots of ways to get there, Nicole. There are lots of different kinds of spell work, different kinds of action that work for manifestation. But I think the most important piece of that, in my experience, is articulating what it is you truly are trying to manifest.
Your will.
Mm-hmm.
Being like absolute in your will.
Absolutely. And whenever you have those little shards of doubt, they slow it down.
Yeah.
I wish I was as enlightened as the three of you, quite frankly.
A lot of work. My answer to that is, first and foremost, I'd love to say that her answer was awesome. I am all about intent. And I tell my students, I call that wordology.
That's great. I love that.
It's like a wordology. It's like the first thing is important is your petition of intent, which we will loosely translate to an incantation. And it is important that you speak it as you want it to be, not as you hope it to be. I tend to stay away from words like manifestation and work with causing change with my will. Because when I say something, if I'm doing spellcraft for a client, which is majority of when I'm doing spell work, because I do so much of it now for people, when everything is laid out on the altar, before I even get the flame lit or the herbs invoked, it's already happened. I have four of my major things that I teach people that you need to make witchcraft work for you is you need will, you need faith in what you do, and back it, you need the imagination, because without your imagination, you can't bring it to the front of your mind to get it out there. And you need secrecy. Now, secrecy it's not because we're trying to keep stuff from the world. That is one of the things that a lot of people think it means. But the reason that we don't speak about our spellcraft is not to keep it hidden, but it's to keep it out of our conscious mind. Because if we look at this from an analytical perspective, we are manipulating objects on the microcosm in the here and now. That's what witchcraft is. It's giving what we want to our id, to our nefesh, to our lower ego. All right. When I say that, that means love, money, careers, cars, decisions in life, all the things that we do in the microcosm to give us the life that we desire is literally a microcosmic action. It's not your macrocosmic action dealing with spirituality as much, So down on the microcosm, we use objects to represent these, and then we manipulate them to cause it to react to the subconscious mind. Because in the subconscious mind, this is where things go to actually manifest. And getting that manifestation to occur is causing it to reflect in the macrocosm above, getting it into the subconscious mind and then making it produce. So if you're speaking about the work that you've done, then you're defeating your work. You need to get it out of your mind, at your front of your mind. And I have something I say in class, and I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here. And,
oh, but please, we encourage profanity.
My East Coast sensibility is going to come out for a minute, and I don't mean to disrespect anybody in the room. But
I can say whatever you fucking want.
All right, here we go. So, we use the microcosm, we use the subconscious, the conscious mind. We eat, we sleep, we drink, we shit, we piss, we fuck, we procreate, and we die. Okay, that's what we're doing down here. And bringing in the things that we need to cause that these changes, whether it be a new pair of shoes to make us feel better, or a Tesla, or that house on the hill with a pretty garden, or the perfect partner, or the lover for the weekend. These are all aspects of our microcosm, our self. And this is what we do down here, because it's going to uplift us, right? And that is how I see spellcraft working. And that's why I think what she has just said about the words that you use, the way you say it, is absolutely the most important thing. It's not the candle, it's not the oil, it's not the herb, it's your words.
And well, if that's the case, let me ask this question to both of you. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between law of attraction and spellcasting?
Who wants to go first?
Why don't you go first on that one? I'm not. I have a lot of questions about the law of attraction, but yeah, you go first. You go first.
That's a little weird, man. I don't know, right? So the law of attraction versus what was the other? What's the other half of it?
But you're saying incantations, because you're saying it. You know, it has to be. You have to have the right intentions. And you have to put out what you want.
Yeah.
That sounds like law of attraction.
Yeah.
Law of attraction is putting something out there and letting it follow its course, which isn't a bad thing. It, to me, that is like when, and I don't mean disrespect when I say this, but that is like a vision board. Okay.
Yes, just like that. It's like a wish without a plan.
It's a yeah, secret. Yes, and thank you so much. You know, her and I are a lot more alike than it looks, because what she just said.
You two are very much alike, trust me. By the time the show ends, you guys are going to be right on. Yeah, I mean,
trust but me. This is it. But that's the difference there. The vision board versus causing change with the will and bringing it together. When I do a spell, I'm not asking for it to happen. I'm telling it's going to, and I'm going to move forward and get what I want. That's my job. I don't have no fear, no guilt, no self-doubt in my magic. That's how it works. And when you do that, you have to be responsible enough to understand that what you ask for is what you're going to get. And most people don't know how to deal with the outcome of that.
Well, also, sometimes the path it takes to get there isn't exactly comfortable. Like, exactly. I remember, I very distinctly wanted one thing very specific. I wanted to really have an affordable apartment, because I realized most of my money was drawn into my apartment. I realized most of my problems were coming from the fact that my money was all tied up in my apartment. So I sent that out there, and then I went through a whole bunch of stuff, and I had to fuck up my whole life. But in the end, I have a really nice apartment and I only pay very little for it. So I got to where I wanted to be, but I did not enjoy the journey.
Sometimes the journey is going to be hell. That's why you have to treat it that way. I don't want to talk too much. I want her to give her answer, because I want to hear it as well. So
when I think about the law of attraction, so a few years ago, probably like a decade ago or more now, there was this movie called The Secret. And I'm not going to knock The Secret. The people who did it, they put it out there. I think they self-produced it. And I know a lot of people that it did a lot of good for. So kudos for that. However, it was sort of a half-baked system. And it was not spellcraft. It was a movie about wishing, basically. It's saying, you know, if you want to make $1 million, all you have to do is wish for it and it will attract to you. That's a lovely idea. I wish that I knew that magic. I don't. I mean, it would be great if all I had to say was, I wish for $1 million and I'm going to go pick flowers. It hasn't happened like that in my experience. So, that was what the law of attraction was presented to the public as. Now, in science, the law of attraction is like attracts like. And it is a little different when you look at it in physics than in the movie The Secret. But when it comes to spell casting, in my experience, there is action required. And you will be given steps as you go towards your goal. And you have to choose to take them. You can't just sit on, I was about to swear. I said, you can't just sit on your
ass.
Sit
on your ass. I'm going to swear for you.
You can't just sit on your ass when the steps are presented to you. You have to take them or you won't get where you want to go. So I think that the biggest difference between the law of attraction, the way it has been presented publicly, and spell casting is that there's action required. That making a vision board is a lovely activity. And I know a lot of people like to do that going into a new year, or if they want to think about what they want for a new house and they put it on their pin board, that's fun. If you want to have fun, go ahead, do that. But it's not a spell, it's a pin board. I mean, that's okay, but know the difference. So, you know, it's, like I said, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not judging people who want to make vision boards. In therapeutic situations or trying to define what it is you want, that can be a really helpful tool. But as far as getting there, it's just the first step. It's not a plan.
Exactly. You know, my grandmother, I never got to meet her. She died when my father was fighting in World War II. My father turned 100 years old last month, ironically, yeah. But my grandma used to have this saying that my dad told me, it was always in Italian. And it just sums up what we just said. And I'm just going to give you the English version because I don't speak Italian. And she always would say, wish in one hand and shit in the other and see what feels like. Which is our wishes, right? And so that's important that you said that. I love that answer. For sure.
So I want to ask, so while we're talking about manifesting, I kind of hinted to this earlier, but like, so I have spirit guides, and one time one of my guides asked me what would make me happy. And then very shortly after that, I got my cat back, and I didn't even realize that was what was missing in my life, but it aligned with what I needed. And I have had my cat back for a year now, and it's been an amazing experience. So how does Hecate or Arisa, do your spirit guides, how do they impact your life? How do they guide you in the day to day?
I'll go first on this, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to put this as straightforward as I can. Hecate is my breath. She fills my lungs with life every day. And I'm going to get dark for a minute, not because of the show, but truly dark.
We encourage that too.
I had the worst experience of my life in January. I might cry a little bit here for a minute, but I am 58 years old, and my mother died on January 13th. And this is really hard to say, but through my youth and my childhood, I was incredibly close to my mom. And I used to have nightmares that went into 15, 20, and 30 years of my life, of her death. And I had voices that would talk to me when I was a kid. And I'm putting this out in the public right now. It's just the truth. I'm not going to lie. And that would tell me that when my mom died, I had to die. And I lived in fear from 9 years old to 58 of that day. And she died. And Hecate showed me that I didn't physically have to die, that child that was alone went away. That she is here, and my wife is here, and my coven is here. And that's Hikate to me. I don't knock on Hikate's door to ask for spells. It's not in my makeup for that. I literally have prayers every night when I go to bed, and I have rituals that I do, and when I get up in the morning, I do the exact same thing every single day. I've not missed a day in 5 years. And that is my religion. That is my Hikate. And although other people may work with Hikate and have her as their goddess, every Hikate is someone, it belongs to someone in their own way. Mine is the one that I have and how I see her. And she has given me that. She's given me the store. She's given me wealth. She's given me foundation for a wonderful life. I don't like bothering my goddess for spellcraft because it's microcosm to me. I cause change in conformity with my will by working planets, like I just explained to you, but I don't hardly ever call her into space. And almost never, actually I can say pretty much never, I never do spell work for myself. I've learned over the years, and this is magically speaking, nothing to do with Hikate. When I was in my 30s, I was doing a lot of spellcraft. And a mentor of mine said to me, someday you're going to move on from this. You are the magician in the tarot deck right now. You're the magician card. And I'm Mercury, I'm Virgo, so that is very much magician card. But he's like, in your life, you're going to realize that you don't have to be doing spellcraft all the time. Because when you walk, you will become the hermit. And when you become the hermit, as you walk, flowers will push up around your feet. And so it's true. I don't need to do spellcraft anymore. But am I doing it constantly? At least 3 a week because I get hired to it. But it's never for myself.
I can relate to that. I've been able to start aligning my will and having it just come forth.
Yeah.
But you're teaching other people how to do it too.
Yeah, and that's my job as a mentor. Yeah, and a teacher.
Which, you know, as your mother mentored you, and you know, we're sorry to hear about her passing, and we love you. You're loved in the Zoom room. I can tell you that right now.
Absolutely.
I don't even know what the initial question was. I was so enthralled with the story, but it's a good transition to tarot because I know Nicole had some questions about that.
I still want to hear about Chris's spirit guides, though. So if you could,
yeah. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Sorry to try to make a smooth transition. And by the way, let's. Since I can't do a smooth transition, I will say that the show is sponsored by Tactical Soap. Don't do that. If you want to get a woman, get Tactical Soap. This is pheromone-infused soap. They have three types, Bond, Durden, and Maverick, three flavors of that. They have soaps. They have deodorants. There's a link in the show description on YouTube and on all podcast catchers for our predominantly male audience. If you want to attract women, get Tactical Soap. Rissa, what about your spirit guide?
Marissa, I'm so sorry I took so much time, by the way.
Absolutely not. I thought your story was moving, and I was glad to be witness to it. I don't have a story at all like yours, actually. I have had multiple spirit guides over time, and most of them relate more to my divination work than they do to spell work. The one who's worked with me the most recently, her name is Veronica. She only appeared in the past few years. I hear her standing right behind me. I literally hear her talking. And usually when I'm reading for other people, she'll tell me things about their life or the people in their world. And I can ask questions or say, tell me about your son's recent passing. And she gives me information that is useful during my readings. So I I don't have an incredible story like yours, Sal. My spirit guides work very differently.
Truth, I speak. I just let things pour out of me, and I'm sorry. Okay.
But you were very close to crying yourself, Rissa. So
it was an amazing story. Yeah, I'm not putting my spirit guides down in any way, Veronica. If you're listening, I'm super grateful for you. Yes. But yeah, it's just a very different experience for me, mm-hmm. and the way that they speak to me, interact with me, talk to me in my dreams, things like that.
Nicole, do you have a spirit guide?
I do. His name is Billith. He's one of the Goetia, and I just got matched up with him. There was a time in my life where I was visited by multiple spirits, and the one that stuck around was Billith. So,
and a question for all three of you: I don't have a spirit guide, or I'm not aware of my spirit guide. How do I find my spirit guide?
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
I'm gonna let Marissa answer that because I'm very analytical and very much a Virgo. So
I'm a Pisces, so we're on the opposite side. So, you know, Mark, I think the first thing you should do is ask your spirit guide to send you a sign, something specific. And I mean, don't say something like, send me a cloud in the sky. That's completely nonsense. Ask for something specific. Say, you know, when you're with me, I want an avocado. And you will be surprised how that avocado shows up. A lot of the people I work with, they pick something random, like they want to see a goat. And mm-hmm. the goat will show up on somebody's tattoo that's standing in front of them in line or something like that. Not an actual goat, doesn't come running down the city street. But
how would I identify the spirit guide from that? Because let's be honest, my spirit guide is going to show me something ridiculous. I mean, if they're matched up with me. So how would I recognize who that spirit guide would be?
They you a thought that isn't your thought.
It sounds like someone else is talking. And I mean, not everybody hears it as literally as I do, but I think that after time, you can definitely tell the difference when your spirit guide is talking and when it's your own line of thinking. I know when you're doing any kind of psychic work, you quickly learn to hear the difference because otherwise it makes you feel crazy.
It's not like schizophrenia. You're not hearing them outside your head. It's a thought in your head that just isn't your thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know yourself really well and know your own thoughts so you can tell the difference.
The self-awareness is key. Yeah.
Sal, do you have an experience? Are you
I don't really spirit guides. I don't. That's not one of my areas. I do have egregores and I do have servitors mm-hmm. for magical work that help me. And I have certain hints from certain entities that I will work with in the Goetia, which is where we get the name Goetia from in Greek. I have a specific, I have two different fetch in my care. And a fetch is something that you summon a lower entity, a lower form, and you house it in something. And you feed it and care for it and have a dynamic with it. And then when it's time, you unleash it and it does work for you on the astral. And I do have that. I have a couple of them. I have one that they're both skulls. One is a human skull and one is a dog skull that I specifically have enchanted through certain means of necromantic work. Where I've used open earth from a specific grave, and I communicated with the individual at the grave and connected with them before removing anything, because you just don't do that. There's rules. First off, you don't want to do anything illegal. Always do things legally. You don't be like healing. That's just wrong, you know? And the dead are sacred, especially to who I work with. She is the mother of the dead, and the Everoi and the restless dead walk with her in the night because, you know, all those graves out there that are in the graveyards that we see all over the world, you'll always see the ones in the corners that people have forgotten. They become the restless dead. And so what I do is I create a care situation for them. I go there and I clean their space and I put flowers there, communicate with them, leave them gifts. And then in turn, there's certain things that I could utilize that represent. And that went into a human skull. And then it's sealed, it has certain herbs in it. And then when it's time, I can call onto that. And then we have that relationship. So, and this might be a little different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Nicole, what next magical topic do you have?
I think we should go with your topic, which is tarot.
Okay. That's
what has been your experiences with tarot? We'll start with Rissa because Sal is a little bit different.
Yeah. And
so that goes without saying. Same of the year.
So, you know, no, Nicole, I grew up with tarot, and I went through a phase in my teen years where I rejected it because it was a family tradition. That's when I started tea leaf reading, you know, to be rebellious. I became a tea leaf reader. I know that sounds hilarious and really silly.
What a rebel.
Right, exactly.
Did you grow up very religious, Rissa, by the way? Just a sidebar, because I know that Sal did.
Did I grow up what? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Very religious, because I know Sal did.
Very religious?
Yes. Like in a religious family?
Like you mean like a church-going family?
Like a really super religious type of family?
I wasn't that way.
I thought you were a Catholic and
I was an altar boy, but I did that because I wanted to learn about it so I could win.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely not for me.
My sidebars don't work out, so I apologize. Go right ahead.
You know, I did go through a phase when I was maybe 12 or 13, where a lot of the children I was in school with were getting confirmed or having bar mitzvahs, and I was completely outside of that. And I was confused because I thought, why don't I have something like that too? And it just wasn't part of my family's culture. They didn't do any things like that. And they didn't believe in going to a church or synagogue or temple for any kind of organized religion. My dad had spent time with Native cultures, and he believed that nature was our temple, our place of faith. And that's just kind of what I grew up with. But on my mother's side, that's where the tarot reading was. And I do have my grandmother's deck. It is the deck I learned on. It is a Tarot de Marseille deck. And it is the kind that still has the pip cards, Nicole. So when you look at it, it doesn't have all the faces. Like, on the major arcana, there are faces. But right. The other cards are more like a traditional playing deck. And I remember the first time, like this is the one of the swords cards. The first time I saw Pamela Coleman Smith's tarot deck, I was like, who are all these people? Like, what are they doing on the tarot cards? I was just so surprised to see. Here's
about what year are those cards?
The cards that were just in my hand.
Yes.
They were probably purchased in the early 70s before I was born.
Oh, okay. I thought they might have been.
That wasn't that long ago. People,
I thought you were going to be like, 1920 or 1890, but no, they're...
No, I don't have anything from the 1920s. That would be very cool. I would love to get up to the Metropolitan Museum at the Cloisters. They have some of the old hand-painted tarot decks from Europe. I haven't seen them yet in person, and I would love to see them. I know Yale University has some too, right. But so the original tarot like decks were hand painted.
So it's like disco tarot cards.
they were, but it's unusual though that people would have a Tarot de Marseille in nowhere Pennsylvania, because these cards, these Pamela Coleman Smith, were kind of the common deck that was sold in the United States.
In the 70s, they were. You're right.
Yep. Right. So I do have a couple of other vintage decks, but nothing older than the 70s. So, yeah, sorry to disappoint you, Mark.
Okay, Sal, 70s is vintage now.
Yeah,
it's so weird to say that. Somebody told me the other day, I got so excited because I rang this kid up on my register at the store, and I'm like, oh my God, 1984. Was such a great year for music for me. And, you know, I literally was 20 years old, and the kid's like, I need to buy something else. I'm like, what? He's like, I don't know, just change that number. And I'm like, why? And he's like, because it reminds me of that bad book by George Orwell. And I'm like, but what about the music? He's like, the music? He's like, what do I know about the music? I'm like, you don't know who Prince is? Or, and he's like, no, it's like old people music. And then he said to me, you know what, man? He's like, the 80s are further away from me than the 50s were for you. And I was like,
and he's right.
No, yeah, that fucked my mind up. So, you know, it just sparks me. It's just weird to hear that.
But he's full of shit too, because of Stranger Things, he's listening to Kate Bush and Metallica. He's full of shit.
Run up that hill. Exactly.
But Nicole, I know you do tarot readings.
I do. I'm having a little bit of a problem with it right now because I did a tarot reading for someone and then what I said would happen happened, but the way that it happened, I don't really want to go into details, but the way that it happened was so messed up. I thought I should have drawn a tower card or at least the Wheel of Fortune card or something that would have warned them that this bad thing was going to happen, but instead it only showed them the end result, which is they would be spending more time with their family. I have like this, I'm going to do a tarot reading next Tuesday, actually. And it's going to be the first one I've done since that happened, because I was kind of like shook. I'm like, why was it not more specific? Why did it not warn them? What is the point of telling them the end result when you didn't tell them that this big thing was coming?
And has so that I ever just, happened to you,
absolutely.
By reading?
I'm always surprised by readings, and sometimes better and sometimes worse, actually, mm-hmm. to be honest. You know, it's that a piece in the middle that you don't always see in the cards or the tea or whatever it is you're looking at as a medium. And I think that sometimes these things have to happen in the way they're going to happen. Kind of like you were talking about how you got to the apartment, you had to go through hell. It's no different for other people. Sometimes we have to take the hard path. You know, I do these quick Mystic Monday readings for a store called The Dark Parlor. And the last card I drew was the Coyote. And the whole meaning of the Coyote card in this particular Oracle deck was that sometimes it's almost like there's going to be a trick played on you and it's going to suck, but it's going to get you where you wanted to go anyway. Mm-hmm. And I really loved the card. And, you know, when I first drew it, I was like, oh, a lot of people aren't going to like this reading. But I really liked it because, you know, coyotes are amazing animals. They're super resourceful and they work together as a team, which is a lovely thing to pull as a spirit animal card. The next thing to think about, though, things almost never happen exactly the way you think they're going to happen. And sometimes that's unpleasant, but we have to go through that lesson. It's something that is just an inevitable part of the path. There has to be shadow and light. And that's one thing I end up talking to a lot of people about, because they just want to see the light. They just want to see the end result. They just want to see the easy stuff. They just want to see the flowers. They don't want to put their hands in the dirt to put down seeds. And that's just not the way it goes, unfortunately.
I see Sal shaking his head.
I agree. She's right. That's how it is in spellcraft. Same thing. You know, people want things, but they're not seeing. They're only, that's the microcosmic thought. What's gonna satiate that urge, that need that they have? But what about what falls before it? You know, what's gonna happen? Everything happens when it goes down that path for a reason. You know, so that's why I was agreeing with her.
And you know, Nicole, sometimes if I'm doing a reading with like my cards and I'm thinking about the tower card, even if I don't pull it, I mention it to my seeker. I say, you know, we didn't pull this card today, but I'm thinking a lot about the tower card. So that might mean there's some challenges ahead of you.
I did think about the tower card that day too. I think you're right. I think the instinct was there, it just didn't come out of the deck.
Yeah, if there's a card I'm thinking about, if I'm thinking like the Seven of Swords, even if it is not on that spread, I mention it anyway. And I always tell people, especially if they're taking notes, write this down. You need to know about this card. It's speaking to me through my intuition, even if it's not on the paper pile in front of us.
Yeah, I felt really bad about that. I haven't seen that person since, the person I did the reading for, but I'm sure they're not happy with me. So I didn't fail.
You're not the one that did the bad thing to him, or the
no, yeah. But I remember someone said, well, it's like, there was always that. Like, why didn't you predict this? That gets asked a lot to witches. Like, that just is a common question.
You know, yes. How many people have asked me, why didn't you predict the pandemic?
Yeah, what the hell?
That's my go-to question.
My job, I'm not Nostradamus.
Yeah. And I've actually said the same thing to people before. And, you know, the only lead-in I had that something was coming was that for almost 3 months beforehand, every tea leaf reading I did had a squirrel in it. And the way I read a squirrel in the teacup is that it's time to save your resources, that you have to put away all of your nuts and seeds because hard times are coming. And it was in every single cup. And I remember thinking, like, that's weird. I wonder what that's about. And then the pandemic hit, and it was good for people who had their resources saved. But it was the only hint I had at all.
Especially vegans.
Especially vegans need to save all of their seeds and nuts. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, speaking of seeds and nuts, if you're looking to relax and enjoy yourself, have some Renegade CBD. That is natural. And you get your bath bombs, you get your gummies, you get your edibles. Go to renegadecbd.com and, you know, be like a squirrel. Hoard your CBD at renegadecbd.com. Nicole, I mean, this has just whipped by so fast. What other questions?
We covered all the topics I wanted to discuss. Mark, you pick the next question.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I want to go to the tarot, and then I'm going to go back to Sal, because Rissa does YouTube group readings every month, and I've been watching them. And how can you do a group reading to everybody that's watching on YouTube? That, I mean, I'm a little behind, so all the readings I saw were out of date, so obviously they don't apply to me. But I mean, do they apply to one person watching? Do they apply to everybody watching? And smoke readings too. Nicole saw the smoke readings; she loved it. But that's because there was a cat in it.
Yes, there was a cat. That was a rough cat. I'm not going to lie. I was cat sitting that cat, and it was the most devilish cat I've ever met in my entire life. Wasn't it biting me during the video?
Yeah, it bit you twice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a
very devilish cat. By the way, it is National Pet Day, and Trouble has joined us for the whole thing.
Oh, Trouble.
He asked to get on my lap at the beginning of the thing, and he's just been sitting here quietly.
Tell Rissa how much Trouble enjoyed the Krampus.
Oh, he loved it. I took a video for you. I'm sure you got to see it. He loved it.
I enjoyed that. Plays with I'm it. So glad. Yeah, it's I'm really glad he likes Krampus.
Well, when people watch your group smoke readings or tea readings, how does everybody, are you predicting everybody's futures, one person's future, some people's future?
I do it with the intention that the people who need to find it will see it. And I can't do one reading for the whole world. It doesn't work that way. And it would just be, it would be so general. It would be something like, you're going to have a day today. Good luck. You know, but I do it with the intention that everybody who sees it is who it's for. And if someone needs to find that message, that it will be there for them when they get to YouTube or when they're randomly searching. Right. So that's sort of how I put the intention into those group readings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also, Mark, to be honest, from a business point of view, it's so that people can meet me and see if they would like a reading from me personally as well. Okay. You know, do they like my style? Do they like my drawings? Do they like my presence? And if the answer to those questions is no, then I should definitely never do a reading for them.
Right. Well, we like your style. We like your presence. And actually, Nicole and I texted a couple of months ago how you make gray hair sexy. I got to be honest with you. We both agreed on that.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, no, we want to know about your feelings on tarot. It's your turn.
Yeah. So this is where I split off from my look. So I'm very, again, I'm a Virgo. Everything is compartmentalized. I'm very analytical about how I see everything that I do magically or otherwise. And this is where the high magic end comes in for me. I don't utilize tarot. I own about 30 decks. I'm a store owner that sells tarot cards. Of course, I've got a bulk of things. And I bought myself that deck the other night and it just got here, which I'm very happy with. But tarot cards for me, this is where the Golden Dawn would come into play. For me, the tarot cards are a pathworking tool. They're not a divination tool. I was trained to utilize the major arcana because each one of them correlates to one of the 22 pathways on the Tree of Life. And when you meditate on these cards, it helps you pathwork on situations in your life. And also, when you're pathworking, if you're pathworking in these different pathways, in between them are the sephira, or the orbs, which are also paths. So there's technically 32. And those usually establish what we call temples in each of these areas. And then we pathwork the card between that one and the next sphere. So that's how I see it. I've never saw it as a reading deck. I've done some study on the theories of tarot and the timeframes in which they say they might have come. Again, there's nothing proven, but they're saying around 1340 was around the time where they were really being developed. And I heard one of the coolest things I heard about the tarot cards was it was art, but it was also a way that kingdoms and kings would communicate with other kingdoms. And these depictions on these plates would then give information and thoughts on social structure and movement and war and battle and, you know, all the things that lands do to take over the other lands. This was a way of communicating them, was off that. So, I mean, I look at it more that way, but as far as me using them, I never read people with them at all. I use them for my own work when I'm trying to go in. I will also use them if there is a correlative to a spell that I'm doing, and I'll bring in the associative card to it. But I never use it for reading. There's so many people out there that are good. We have for here, you know, they're adept at this. This is not my field, you know, of expertise. Now, you want to know how to spell work on someone. As you know, you've come and talked to me, and that's what I do. I'm a spellcaster. I'm not a diviner, definitely.
Well, you guys do different things, but there's no East Coast, West Coast magic beef. It's
Good God, no. I'm from back east originally. I'm a Bostonian.
But Rissa, next time you're in LA, and I hope you're in LA soon. I know it's been a while.
I would love for you to come teach.
We got to take you to the Crooked Path.
Would love to come, and I would love to teach there, Sal.
Yeah, you could guest read here too. We always bring in guest readers. So I would love to.
If Rissa goes to the Crooked Path, or anybody in LA goes to the Crooked Path, tell them what to expect and what you have to offer there.
So my store is definitely its own microcosm. When you come here, you're here for witchcraft. You're not here for the metaphysics side of things. I don't sell sound bowls. I sell stones, but stones are, people love them, and I use them Ptolemaically. But people come here to learn spellcraft. They come here to learn how to work with deities. They come here to understand witchcraft and understand that it's for everyone. A witch doesn't have to be someone that is born into it. A witch is just acknowledging the fact that you are. And that's why I'm very, I'm not about binary terminology. And I'm not about one person being and one person not being someone is or isn't. I think we all are. If we have the inkling of the acknowledgement for it, that's beautiful. If you have a family, Brad, that you come from, you're very blessed, like Marissa is. But not everybody has that. But that does not diffuse the fact that they are witches as well. And I am here to give them that. So you come here and you'll find the tools and the understanding on how to do witchcraft and spellcraft. Now, you also have here a great group of teachers. And one of the main things is the Temple of Hecate. I'm in it right now. Can I give you a little mini tour of a 12-foot room?
Please.
All right, so let me flip it around and get my mug off the screen.
And before you do that, Rissa's going to do that for us when we go to Baltimore one of these days.
Yeah, that's
what you're
reading, Zad. All right. So this piece here is, it took 3 years to make this. This is obviously Hecate. She's Triadetes or Triformis, meaning she has her three realms intact. So when you spin her, you'll see that there's actually the serpent head. I lost her. Where'd she go? Where are you? There you are. There you go. So there's the serpent head right there. And then on the other side,
one more time. There we go.
Snake skin, you've got the dog head. So this was something that Jeff Cullen made. He's the author of Liber Gasonia. And on the walls of it, you've got here the Orphic hymn in ancient Greek, which is a call to Hecate. And on this door, you have the Medea call to Hecate, which most people utilize when they're in the room. And the art on the walls is really what people want to see. So these are made by my students, all of them. This is another perspective on Hecate Triadetes or Triformis, showing her three realms.
Right.
Then over here, you've got the More, or the three fates, which the fates, you know, Clotho here, the first individual, she spins the thread that is your life. And then her sister over here is Lachesis, and she stretches out the duration of your life. And then Atropos cuts it. Mm. And that's where your life ends. So there's the three fates. On the main door, what you've got is Kerberos, which is the three-headed hound to the underworld. On this wall, you have the Grey. And these are the three sisters of Grey, and they share one eye. And as you can see, there is actually an obsidian in the eye, and the coven uses that for divining. And they share also, I can find it, one tooth, which is up on the side array there. And then over here, you've got the Graces, which bring in beauty and bounty and fame and charity and wealth. And they're like kind of like the Three of Cups, right? Then you've got the three sisters of the Gorgon. There's Medusa and Sino and Uriel. And then on the back wall over here, you've got the Furies, mm-hmm. which is straight aggression. So this is for heavier, darker magic when you release wrath. And on the floor, there's a sigil that you can see here that calls in any of the three at any point. So people come up here, and it was part of my agreement with Hecate to give people a place to come and work with her. And they don't have to buy things from the store. If they want to work with the goddess or get to know the goddess, they can come up here, close the door, and right when you walk in, there's candles and incense for her that I supply myself. It doesn't come out of the store at all. And they can leave like 50 cents or a dollar if they wish to reimburse for the candles that they use, so I can put more up there. But this is a place just for a temple to worship the coffin. And that is one of the main things that we've got here. The Crooked Path is a fully functional, full service emporium. We have one of the largest selections of raw herbs in Los Angeles. We have an entire wall downstairs with over, I think we've got over 300 herbs and essential oils that we sell by the dram. And we have incredibly low prices. I'm very proud of that.
I was going to say, I looked at your website and I was blown away at how affordable all of your supplies were. And I hear is how expensive LA is. And I was like, what? This is so reasonably priced.
That's my job. My job is not to rate people for their spirituality. It's to give them a place to find it. And we want to, of course, keep our doors open, but we will never, ever, ever overcharge. I refuse to do that.
It's impressive pricing. I was just like, well, damn, I should buy some stuff online here. This looks great.
Thank you so much. You know, my wife has a background in corporate America. So when I met my wife, I, believe it or not, I was an armed security guard. I carried a gun every day. I went to my job. I was in the jewelry district. I was armed for 10 years. And I met my wife.
In the jewelry district, you have to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I carried a 40 every day. And my wife was head of sports marketing at Ticketmaster. So she was in charge of Super Bowl, NBA, and NFL. All that was her account. So that's what she did. And I came home one day and she's like, what do you want to do? I was getting tired. You know, I had to get into a fight and take someone down. And I'm like, I want to open a wood shop and get back to my roots. And she made it happen. My wife is a wizard, no pun intended, with finance and business. And so this is what, which leads me to the, one of the last things I really wanted to discuss about the store is Poppy, my wife, has watched me teach people about Ptolemaic scale magic and planetary magic. And she has taken this and turned it into tech. So she has made the first spellcraft application that you can use to actually do real spellcraft. Mm-hmm. It's all drop-down menus that tells you the planet, the color, the number, the herbs that go with it, the oils that go with it, the time of day to burn the candles and do the work. And it's all in your fingertips, and it's incredibly inexpensive to have. It's a really low number for the app, but it's called Planetary Magic, and it's actually doing incredibly well. So, you know, her technology, her tech brain, I hate the computer stuff. I'm, you know, I just do what I do. Sometimes I'm behind my counter and I'm a crotchety old witch, a lot like George Derby was back in his day. Mm-hmm. But my wife, it was all full of love and business, and we have a good time. So,
see, you've turned into the crotchety old witch.
I did.
You were mentored by a crotchety old witch, and you became a crotchety old witch.
Yeah, I did. Watching George, and sometimes I don't think I'm like crotchety, but I'm very much a Bostonian. And if you ask a stupid question, I'm going to give a stupid answer. You know, I go by the adage, if you follow a dumb kid home from school and you knock on the door, a dumb parent's going to pick up, open the door up. You know what I mean? And but I treat everybody respectfully, of course. And I want people to learn. I don't want to look down my nose. I'm not a gatekeeper of the craft. I believe that it's for everyone.
Right. You've taken the traditions that he taught you, that and things that your mother taught you, and you're passing it along.
Yeah, revamping it and making it for people.
And there's an app for that.
There's an app for that, Planetary Magic. Yeah. App for
that. That's amazing.
Planetary Magic has a K. Actually has a K, not a
I was going to get to that. Now, we've asked this question before, but what's the difference between magic with a C and magic with a K? And you might have two different answers, or three of you might have three.
Probably three different answers, and that's okay, because there's one thing that I want to preface before I give you this answer. And it's okay to have differences of opinion in magic, because if we don't, then it becomes static and it's no point. You don't want static action in the magic, or also it doesn't work anymore. So it's good to have perspectives and views. Now, with that, magic with a K, basically, it was a Crowleyism. It was something he first developed because he was coming out of, you know, Victorian Britain. And when you were connecting with spiritualists and people of this level, they were doing a lot of prestidigitation and quote unquote talking to spirit, but a lot of it was smoke and mirrors, literally. You know, actually, a lot of people don't know this, but Helena Blavatsky, who created the Theosophical Society, actually almost went to jail for doing that exact same thing. So Crowley put a K on the end of it so it could delineate the two worlds. And now people in the modern time will use the K when it has something to do with magical structure. And most of them are ceremonial magicians. But it's leaked over into witchcraft as well, because it puts a space between it. It doesn't mean that one is wrong and one is right. It's like spelling Hecate with a C or a K.
Right.
Okay, same type of idea.
I actually knew it was from history, from the Victorian era. But as soon as he said it was related to Crowley and the Victorians and the spiritualists, I that was the laugh. I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds right.
Thank you.
That sounds right. And I, you know, I'm also an editor. So I, as a job, so I love when things are put in their correct place grammatically. Mm-hmm. So to me, when I use a K on the word magic is when I'm talking about a magical working, and otherwise it just gets a C. Now I do see people use the CK as well. And I figure language always changes. Language will always evolve with us. And I'm pretty sure that people younger than me or younger than any of us on this podcast are changing language right now.
Sure.
And they're changing the nature of the use of the word magic. And their magic will be different than ours. And I'm excited to see what they do.
Me too.
I'm sure it'll be an acronym.
I've had this new thing coming up. We do a thing here at my store called Sit a Spell, and it's free. And it's the last, it's the third Sunday of every month. And we had a great topic, and that was AI in magic.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Tell me about that, Sal.
Oh, it was so intense because it was Michael Patterson. Of course, we know Michael from Cloak. Michael and I are very, very close, and I bring him on all things, and he loves to stir the pot. He's definitely a ceremonial magician, but he also very much works with Hecate. But, you know, we're always looking to be the devil's advocate in the room. So even if I don't agree with the situation, I will bring it up just to throw a monkey wrench into the pot to make everybody go, oh, no, this is wrong. You know, I love that. And but it came up, you know, and because
has AI cast any spells yet?
I went on to ChatGPT, which is the free one that you can get. And
I have a feeling you'd be the troublemaker, but yeah, so what happened?
So I went and got on there and I was like, all right, let's see what you got, magic. You know, let's see what we got on this thing. So I went and said, I want to create a Defixian tablet that will be utilized in a flactory. And it gave me a 4-page dissertation on how to do it.
Wow.
It was absolutely on point. So there you go.
No, I know there's a 14-year-old aspiring witch that is casting spells on ChatGPT right now. But I got to tell you, what a witchy good time this is, Nicole.
Yeah, it was great.
Nicole, what is the biggest misconception about witches, and what would you like to dispel about them?
The biggest misconception about witches is that all of us are Satanists.
Right. Do you agree with that, Rissa?
That is probably the biggest one, or that we all have bad intentions.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, that we're evil. That's the biggest.
That we're evildoers, yeah. Yeah.
And you're not. You're three of the nicest, sweetest, coolest people I've ever met. And I've never met Rissa, but I just virtually she is. And, you know, so AI, don't cast a spell on me. But Sal, tell everybody how they can, you know, about the Crooked Path, about your website, about your app and everything, anything you want to promote, please.
Before I get into all that promotion of the self, that is very secondary to
me.
It's
the magic of capitalism. Come on.
I know, but I will do that. But I would like to just share what I would like to leave on the plate. And that is this: magic, causing change with will in witchcraft, is real. It's not fake. It's not something you do on the weekend for kicks with your friends. Same thing I teach with my students when they come into my class. You have to look at and this is kind of might not be the best way to explain it, but I always tell them, if you walk into your house and you go to your kitchen table and there is a semi-automatic 40 cal pistol on the gun, on the table, and it's racked and ready to go. If you leave it there, it will stay and collect dust, but eventually it will get picked up. Mm-hmm. And when you pick it up, where do you go from there? Most people will put their finger in the trigger guard, which is the first thing you don't want to do. What they should know how to do is take the rounds out of the gun and make it dormant. Magic needs to be treated the same way. Do not think that if you, you know, you're going to do this and haphazardly, you're going to call in this spirit or this entity or do this work and think it's not going to kick your ass, because it will. Magic will work, and you have to be level-headed, analytical, and think out what you do before you approach it, and read and study. Magic and witchcraft is not something you just do and then go back to your life. It's what you are. And you can't build a pyramid on something without a foundation, because it'll just fall in on itself. So that's what I would like to share.
Wise words. I appreciate that.
Yeah. As far as my store, it's just, 2020 West Magnolia Boulevard in downtown Burbank, California, which is a really fun place to be.
Nicole, I'm going to stop by soon, and it's Burbank. That part of Burbank is a cool spot. Yours is the coolest.
Great donut shop. right below to us is an ecclesia, which is a church, and they're very nice to us. We don't have wars with them. It's not like the way people imagine it to be. We're definitely called the Crooked Path, and it is thecrookedpathshop.com. And the Planetary Magic app is PlanetaryMagick. You can also find links to that on all our different forms of media. You've got crookedpath_LA, which is the store Instagram. You can get a hold of me directly if you ever need, if you have any questions about spell work or things that you want to know. I am not someone that will ever turn people away. So hit me up on my personal Instagram. The store, I don't really deal with. It's more with the retail. But you can find me at Salvatore, SALV as in Victor, ATORE _ Modern Witch. And pop on and say hi. Marissa and all her amazing knowledge. And Marissa, you are phenomenal, and I would love to have you in my store.
I would love to come. Thank you for the invitation.
Such a magical being. You really are.
There's so much magic here, and I'm here too. But Marissa, now you do so much. You do tea readings, you do smoke readings. Tell everybody all that you do and how they can get hold of you.
You can find me at teaandsmoke.com. Super simple. And I just had the front of my website redesigned, so it looks extra elegant right now. And I have those free monthly smoke readings on my YouTube channel. So smoke and tea, so that you can see what it looks like. A lot of people have never seen tea or smoke readings happen in real life. So, I invite you to check it out.
Absolutely.
Do you have an Instagram?
I do. It's tea and smoke _ by Rissa.
All right, let me get this on here. Tea and smoke?
Smoke _ by Rissa. Yeah, the just tea and smoke was taken by somebody who sells tea.
Oh, man. I want to smoke _. La, da, da, da. I love all this stuff. I'm going to definitely stay in touch with Can't smoke _ Marissa. By Marissa or just Marissa?
Just by BY Rissa, RISSA.
Oh, Rissa. Bye. Yep.
My full name is actually Nerissa, NERISSA, which you might know from mythology.
Wow. I got you.
I didn't know that. You learn something new every day. Rissa, we love having you on the show. I don't know. You may have put a love spell on me and Nicole, but we just love having you and love having you on the show. And Rissa, what did you think of Nicole's poetry book? I know you ordered.
I read it quite a few months ago, Nicole, and I really liked it. I shared it on all my social media, so I don't know if that was worth anything to you or sales or not, but I tried. I really liked your willingness to go into your darker feelings, and I know that that's something that poets either are willing to do or not, and I know it takes a lot of courage to put that out there, so I applaud you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Actually, Nicole, why aren't your books on our shelves? You can totally carry them here.
I'll get you some copies. I have to order them. I haven't got, like, my original publisher closed during COVID, so, like, I don't really have copies right now, but I'll order some, and I'll bring them.
Yeah, if you want to carry them in the shop, that'd be great. And actually, if you want, you can do an event here to promote it.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.